I'm John Batchelor with my good colleague Jonathan Schenzer of FDD. He's the executive director. I'm told that the bookish leader of Hezbollah made a presentation, not unlike Nasrallah, on video. He's in an undisclosed location. Not inspirational, but he was there. Hezbollah, what have they learned from watching Gaza and this ceasefire? Are there reasons for them to think we invented that and they're executing it, or are they going in a new direction?
Well, it's fascinating, John. There were indications this week that Hezbollah reached out to Saudi Arabia asking if they could turn a new page. The Saudis are, they've already designated Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. They are not interested in necessarily normalizing ties with Hezbollah, but I think they understand that the Saudis may ultimately be the funders of the reconstruction of Lebanon and that they may have more of a stake in whatever government is coming next. You get a sense that Hezbollah understands that that their future may lie only in their existence as a political party and not as a violent group. And they may be, starting to think about that future. If that is the case, it would be fascinating indeed.
Does that mean disarm, Jonathan?
Well, theoretically, yes. And we know that the Israelis are demanding it. The United States is demanding it. The government of Lebanon is demanding it right now. The question is, at what point will the Hezbollah fighters realize that they have no choice? And I think a lot of that really does rest with the pressure brought to bear by the Arabs, by the French, by the United States, by the Israelis. I'm not seeing a lot of it right now. Right now, it's the government itself that is making noise about it, but not necessarily forcing their hand. So I think, again, this is a watch and wait kind of a scenario, but it's fascinating to see that Hezbollah is already reaching out to moderate Arab states that once saw them as enemies trying to turn a new page. That seems to be a sign of a desire for moderation.
Syria, al-Shar, after his triumph of the United Nations, what is he seeing in Gaza that worries him or that pleases him?
I think that he'd like there to be calm in the region. I think he'd like to have a less, he'd like to see Israel on less of a war footing. The more that Israel is besieged, the more likely Israel is to strike at him and his army, his assets around Syria. So if the region starts to get calm, I think he thinks that that's probably going to portend well for his fortunes. He's also waiting right now for sanctions to lift from the United States. This is something that Donald Trump vowed to enact, and we're getting close to the deadline, I believe next month, John. That could happen. And if it does, then it'd be harder, I think, for Israel to engage in these one-off attacks. There's going to be a push to try to cultivate some kind of a new normalization agreement. It won't be normalization right off the bat. It will be security cooperation first, but that would ultimately yield a political agreement if it holds over time. I have colleagues that have just come back from Damascus. They say that it is relatively stable, but they are also not confident that al-Shara will be in the land of the living over the course of the next year. They are saying that his hold on power is still incredibly tenuous. And I think one of the things that is on his mind right now is try to bring down the temperature around the region, whether that be in Lebanon or in Gaza, in Israel, with Iran, with Turkey. The more there is war, the more dangers await him.
Yemen, the Houthis have declared that they're standing down because of Gaza. Do you believe it?
Well, they are for now, John, but you have to remember this terrorist organization is still amassing missiles and they are amassing drones and they are getting assistance from the Islamic Republic. There is this fascinating story that came out earlier this week about a new base that is being built on the Red Sea in an island called Zuqar. And this is apparently being built, at least according to some, because the Israelis have done so much damage on mainland Yemen that they've wanted to put something away from their population centers, away from the port of Hodeidah. But now that it's known, I don't know if it serves that purpose any longer. So it's unclear what it is that they're trying to achieve here. But one does get a sense that they're maybe looking for a bit of a breather themselves The Israelis just took out half of their cabinet. They have destroyed huge amounts of Houthi assets in northern Yemen. They don't want this to continue. This war has taken a toll on them, even as they've done some damage to Israel in return.
Tehran, that war continues. The Ayatollah was trash-talking Trump and boasting about his fissile material. There's unfinished business here. Who's helping Iran? Who provides for that state within a state, the IRGC and the Al-Quds Force? Who's giving them money?
Well, this is the axis of aggressors, as we call it here at FDD. This is China and Russia primarily. You may see some help from other rogues like North Korea or Venezuela, although I think if they are involved, it is they're bit players. They're probably getting some illicit finance from their allies in Hezbollah because it always was a joint venture between the two. But Iran is in bad shape economically. We know that they've slashed 4 zeros off their currency. A World Bank report from this week suggests that their economy for 2025 is about to contract by nearly 2%, and it will contract again in 2026 by another 2.5%. They are in bad shape, John, and they know it, but they don't know how to stop digging when they're in a hole. And that is exactly what I think the Ayatollah has done. Ayatollah Khamenei came out taunting the United States about its nuclear program. This seems highly problematic for the Iranians if they stay on this course.
Jonathan Shanzer, Executive Director, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,